So Thursday night, I was in Istanbul. I met a spiritual teacher. That Thursday night, after a prayer session, he just looked at me in the eye as if he was connecting something out of the world. He said, "My son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. The name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin. Translated into English means gift of the givers." And then he said something very important. He said, "Whatever you do is done through you and not by you. It's a spiritual calling. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life." So Gift of the Givers was born on that night, 6 August 1992, in Istanbul, in Turkey. Gift of the Givers started off as a disaster response agency. It's still our primary function. We specialize in disaster response. So disaster, this is a complete disaster package. People do either primary healthcare, or they do trauma, or they do search and rescue. We do the whole package. I don't see any organization in the world does that. And that's only one aspect, disaster response. But we do housing projects in South Africa, and in disasters, we do agriculture, provision of water. We're probably the biggest agency dealing with drought in South Africa right now. We do food parcels, feeding schemes, bursaries, education projects. We do sports development, life skills, counseling, provision of wheelchairs, medical support, hospitals. We do a range of different things, and it's probably the most complete organization in the world in terms of disaster response and the type of projects that we do. Because people then look at us and say, "But what do you really do?" You know, when they see so many different types of projects, they get amazed. And everything that we do, we design ourselves. The housing project that we designed in Khayelitsha in Cape Town and Alexandra in Johannesburg has been seen by the big construction companies themselves, came to see what we did. Mayors, premiers, international guests, ambassadors have come to see that kind of project. And then we designed the world's first containerized mobile hospital, the world's first containerized primary healthcare unit. We designed the world's first groundnut soya high energy and protein supplement. Our first project was Bosnia. We got involved in a civil war in Bosnia, where there were tons of refugees coming out from the country. And we responded to the needs of the refugees, and we responded to the needs of the country. And that's why I'm proud of Africa, because the first containerized mobile hospital in the world was designed by us in Africa in 1993. And we took it from Africa to Europe. And that hospital was filmed by international media, and they said, CNN covered it, and said that this South African hospital is comparable to any of the best hospitals in Europe. And when I went back in 2005, at the invitation of the Bosnian government, the people who were still running the hospital said that this South African hospital has given life to tens of thousands of people. Many babies have been born here. And so disaster response was our first intervention. We started off building the hospital. Over a period of time, you know, we only took in things like tents, blankets and medicines. But as we evolved, we then put in primary healthcare medical teams. Then we came into trauma teams, post-trauma rehab, post-op rehab, trauma counselors, then we added search and rescue, we took in sniffer dogs, we started putting up housing projects, providing water and all the medicines and material. We started building hospitals in the war zone. Right now in Syria, we have two hospitals running inside the war zone. People have tried bombing it many times, you know, and we've survived. And we're looking at now putting a third hospital in the war zone and putting up a massive orphanage for 1,000 children, to teach them, to support them, and also look after many refugees which we are looking after right now inside Syria. In this holy place, Muslim holy place, there were people of all cultures, all religions, all countries. Jews, Christians, Hindus, those who say they don't believe in any type of deity, you know, people from America, Russia, India, Australia, Mexico, Brazil, Africa. And I was surprised to see the harmony between different cultures in one holy place. He looked at me and I was stunned to see this kind of unity and calmness between people. He asked me, and this was in August 91. He asked me, "What do you see?" I said, "I see people of all cultures, all religions in harmony here." He said, "My son, mankind is one single nation. The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. Any teacher, any preacher, any rabbi, any sheikh, any imam, any pastor, who promotes violence, extremism, terrorism, the killing of people, confrontation and discord is not a man of God. Don't follow him. Any person who preaches love, kindness and compassion is a man of God. Follow him. I was thrilled and amazed at that kind of philosophy. I fell in love with it. You will help all people of all races, of all colors, of all classes, of all religions, of all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation. But you will help them unconditionally. You will not expect anything in return, not even a thank you. Serve the people with love, with kindness, with compassion and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. So if someone is down on the ground, don't push them down. Hold them and lift them up. To wipe the tear from a crying child, to caress the head of an orphan, to speak words of good counsel to a widow, these are all meritorious acts. To provide food for the hungry, water for the thirsty, and clothe the naked. These are all the kind of things that you will do. And remember that whatever you do, be the best at what you do. Not for ego, but because you're dealing with human emotion, human feeling, human suffering, and human life. I acknowledge, I look at myself, and I realize the kind of things that I have done is not humanly possible. There has to be a bigger hand helping you. There has to be a support staff. There has to be a team. There has to be people around you. Because surely what has been achieved is not humanly possible. The amount of time that we've done it and the kind of things that we've done. And he always said to me, he said, my son, you must have 1/3 time for yourself, 1/3 for your work, and 1/3 for your family. And every time I looked at him and I laughed, I said, teacher, that's impossible. 4/3 are taken up by the work because it's so busy and so much things to deal with. But yes, I'm truly satisfied that what you asked me to do, and I've sort of fulfilled that mandate up to now. The teacher passed away in 1999. Mm-hmm. But before he passed on, he told me, my son, in everything that you do, you will know. The right people will come to you, and they will come from all over the world to you. You don't have to look for money. Money will find you. All those words came true. By inspiration, people come, and I realize that this person is the right person. We don't have the normal system of advertising and say, please, you've got a job, can you please come? People will walk into my office, and most of my staff have come that way. Somebody came to me and said, look, they came for some help to the office, for some counseling or something to the office. And someday the lady would speak and say, you know what, I need a job. I was working somewhere. I lost a job. Can you consider me? We were growing very slowly, you know, and we're also very strict about the amount of staff that we take. And I would look at the person and Mark would say, you know what, give the person a chance. And the person started. To date, from 1992 till now, there's only 2 staff that have left for some other reason. You know, they moved town or they moved somewhere else. Nobody has left Gift of the Gifts. Everybody has been there and they've worked with their heart and their soul. And I tell them very clearly, when you come here, you don't work for money. You work with your heart and your soul. If you can't work with your heart and your soul, you can get a much bigger salary somewhere else because we are an NGO. You can have much better times, no after hours, no weekends. You will be much happier if you come for money. And whoever comes there, now, in December when we close, they say, why have we closed? We don't feel happy at home. We want to work. In the 24-year period, in South African rands, I mean, our money is not strong, but in South African rands, we virtually delivered 2 billion rand in aid to 42 countries, South Africa included. And remember, we haven't gone out to ask for money. We haven't made proposals. We haven't approached government. We haven't approached corporates. We announced, yes, what we do. And remember, this is largely 99% of South African audience, of which 50 million people don't have means in this country. It's a very limited amount of people who really do have means. And those limited amount of people have sort of carried us over these 24 years, and all my hats off to all of them. I like to see African NGOs become self-reliant, self-sufficient. I like to see progress in water. Come to the African continent needs water, it needs agriculture, it needs education, it needs entrepreneurship, it needs fighting of disease, and it needs, you know, free thinking to move away from corruption, to move away from conflict, tribal conflict, to work away from internecine conflict between different tribes, to be better understanding, better relationship between tribes, And with that kind of understanding, we have probably the biggest amount of resources in the world, in this continent, that we can use for the benefit of upgrading the continent. We are not short of resources. We are short in terms of our thinking. And if we change the mindset, the African NGOs who can be advisors to government, be advisors to industry, can bring about a massive change in the thinking, the application, and the development of the continent. The skills are there. I mean, Africa's greatest export are medical people. Nurses, doctors, accountants, engineers, teachers. And if Africa was such a stupid continent, why would the rest of the world grab them? We have them, but there is no opportunity for people to stay in the continent and enhance their own countries. I would like to see all the expatriates come back, and you know, and governments to be more open and better democracy and better involvement for dealing. And we can change, it's not impossible, we can change the lives of 1 billion people on this continent. We're almost there. In this world that is so polarized with so much of conflict between different cultures and religions, for everybody to stand together and say, you are my brother, and holding each other's hands and going up, and we've achieved that. You know, when the teams leave South Africa, when we respond to a disaster, when we get to other countries, people of all religions get confused. They cannot understand how Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, black, white, Indian can stand together as one solid net. And everybody is there for each other when we're working in a war zone or in an earthquake or anywhere else. And they stand like one brotherhood with absolute love. And I encourage everyone, respect each other. We pray to the same God. We're on the same mission. We're there to protect each other. We are there to work with each other. And we are there, above all, to serve the needs of those people who need us most, being the refugees or the recipients or the victims of a disaster. And you'll find people will comment. They said, how long do these 60 or 80 people know each other? We'll say, many of them met each other for the first time today. The comment would be, we would swear they know each other for 10 years. That's the kind of harmony we build with each other. So that is my greatest achievement. And many people say, if anybody can bring people together, you guys can. They must have integrity. They must have honesty. They must be transparent. They mustn't say something and do something else. And you have to lead by example. And again, I use my own case. When we go to a disaster zone, people would ask my team members, nice of you, I'm sure the manager is very busy at home in his country. They say, no, he is a manager. And they'll see me picking up a sack of maize or rice, they say he can't be the manager. Managers don't come to disaster zones. They sit in the office and they send other people. So they say, no, they can't do it. They are lying. This is not the manager. And if you want anything done, you do it first. That's how the organization grew. I put the fax paper in the machine. I put the paper on the wall. I did the door-to-door delivery. So every aspect of the organization, you can't bluff me. Every project is designed by me. The mechanics, I'm not the IT guy, but I know how the people function. I'll read about it and understand, somebody will explain to me. Yes, I can't know. I've left medicine in 94. But everything to do with medicine, I will know all the new stuff, the new technology. I'll get people to brief me, my medical team to advise me, and I will learn. But in everything, I've got to set the example first. When it goes to a war zone, I take the highest risk. I go first alone to see what the risks are, what networks we can build, how I can bring my teams in, and I come back. I don't send somebody else to take the risk. I'm the first one in and the last one out. So you have to have integrity, you have to be honest, you can be transparent, and people have to see that there's sincerity and in the way you operate. They must see the compassion in you. They must see how you respect each other, the dignity, upholding of people. Everything that we say, they have to see that in you. It means Africa has finally been recognized. To me, this is the opportunity to market, to showcase the continent, because we are always forgotten. People, the Africans, as I mentioned earlier, can't do anything. And there are people, you know, philanthropists all over the world who really want to do for Africa. But they're scared to come because they feel they cannot be trusted. Will it be corruption? Will the money disappear? Will the goods be delivered? Is there skills? Are there skills? Is there efficiency? Can the job get done like the people from the Lord? Is it possible? And being recognized by a big company like Anlian Partners, which is globally known, which is linked to so many people, it's like being audited by a big company in Europe. You know, and say, look, we agree that these people's books are clear. You know, we recommend supporting them or giving them money. It's that kind of stamp. And with the media coverage, with the handing over the award by well-known people, it just puts so much of faith in other parts of the world people to support Africa. Not necessarily give to the givers and myself, but to support Africa. So we need to meet. This is, and that's the first thing I spoke about. The moment they said, you know, you won the global award, I said, at last something for Africa. Because this continent needs all the support. And we have very honest people in this continent. We just need to find them. And, you know, people who can deliver the job. I've worked in many parts of the continent in 22 countries, you know, and we've done things. And we found people of integrity, and that's where our projects get done. So yes, it's time asking the world, please open your eyes and visit Africa and see if we can do things for you. That we need to respect religions and colors across the world. We need to respect that people have their own way of worshiping, their own way of praying, their own way of dressing, their own way of eating, but that doesn't change the intrinsic personality of a human being. Eating in a different way, dressing in a different way, speaking in a different way doesn't change your personality and your human emotion, because we all bleed the same color. We all have the same pain. Whichever religion or color or class or nationality you belong to, if you lose a four-year-old child, you feel the same pain as somebody in the north or somebody in the south. If you have no food, hunger you feel in the north, the same hunger that you feel in the south. So we need to understand and open our minds and not put people in boxes. We look at the human being as a human being and forget all these different things that we have. Oh, he's black, he's white, he's European, he's American, he's Jew, he's Christian, he's Indian, he's Muslim. No, you know, we are different people. People within our religions and our cultures do things which harm the whole nation and harm an entire faith group, for that matter, or an entire culture or an entire government. Don't look at the actions of one person or a group of people and say everybody is like that. Look at the overall actions of the whole group, or study the teachings and the philosophies and say, look, are these all people bad? When the banking, when the economy collapsed and world, you know, and banking groups went down, do we say the whole financial system is corrupt? When doctors rob medical aids, do we say it's very bad to be doctors? They're all corrupt. When lawyers take people for a ride in terms of fraud in the type of practice they do, do we say that all lawyers worldwide are corrupt? We don't say that. We say the one lawyer is corrupt. So we identify, when it comes to the business world, a bad accountant, a bad bank, a bad company, you know, bad practice of something. We don't say everybody in the economy is bad. So why can't we apply the same law for people within a religion or a group or a culture or a society? If you look deep enough, you will find there's people who care, who have feelings to bring people together. And I've had an experience from all cultures. There are more people who want to do good and support each other rather than take people apart. So have an open mind and view things, but remove stereotypes, remove prejudice, remove polarized thinking, and re-look and re-examine and be mindful.